Welcome to Tech Insights from InfoTech Research Group, the podcast where our group of expert analysts cut through all the noise and focus on what really matters for technology leaders. It was 20 years ago when astronaut Chris Hadfield hung in space, in orbit 400 kilometers above the Earth's surface. He was attached to the end of the Canadarm, a robotic arm on the space shuttle. He was installing the Canadarm 2, a similar but upgraded version of the arm, onto the International Space Station. In the two decades that have passed, the Canadarm 2 has been a crucial component of the space station. It helped build it. It held astronauts as they completed repairs. It caught cargo ships arriving to the station. The robotic arm is so iconic, it's now featured on the back of Canada's $5 bill. In 2021, the Canadian Space Agency is looking to push ahead with a new chapter in its partnership with NASA. Another robotic arm is on order, with big plans to push deeper into the solar system. Just like its predecessors, the Canadarm 3 will be manufactured by Brampton, Ontario-based MDA. The plans for the arm are to see it installed on the Lunar Gateway, a space station that will orbit the moon. Listen to this clip from NASA that explains the role the Lunar Gateway will play in its plans to return to the moon and eventually go on to Mars.
Everything needed for lunar missions will be positioned in advance by commercial and international partners. This includes rovers, science experiments, and human-rated systems on the surface. But it also includes a dedicated lunar station in orbit around the moon called Gateway. Here at this station, we can pre-stage a robust lunar lander and establish a strong communications relay. Designed with open standards, the Gateway can be expanded as new missions and partnerships develop, allowing multiple human missions on the moon at the same time and enabling ongoing science to be conducted even between human missions. The Gateway is also capable of adjusting its orbit to allow access to every part of the moon, something the Apollo missions could not do. But the real key in this approach is placing Gateway in a unique halo orbit to perfect the maneuvers needed for Mars missions. And with the growing list of commercial and international opportunities, Gateway is the ideal hub between Earth and all that lies beyond.
Not only will the Canadarm 3 be a part of the first space station in orbit around an extraterrestrial body, it will also rely on artificial intelligence to do its work autonomously. Today, on our special first-year anniversary episode of Tech Insights, we're going to hear about the plans for this project from the people that are closest to it. I'm very excited to host a special guest this week. Daniel Ray is the Systems Engineering Manager and the Canadian Space Agency's Chief Engineer for the Lunar Gateway. Welcome to Tech Insights, Daniel.
Hello, Brian. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you here. So before we talk about what the Canadarm 3 might look like, can you briefly remind us of a couple of the highlights of the Canadarm on the space shuttle and the Canadarm 2 on the International Space Station?
Absolutely. The first thing to keep in mind is we have so much history here, it's hard to have just a few highlights, but the Canadarm was used on five different space shuttles for over 30 years, and Canadarm 2 has been operating successfully on the International Space Station for over 20 years. These are Canadian icons that we can be very proud of. They have been outperforming their specs, and their lifetime is incredible. If you want to be able to visualize what Canadarm 2 looks like and its robotic companion Dexter, the two-armed robot on the International Space Station, I invite you to look at the back of the $5 bill, which has a great image there. And we also see a Canadian astronaut. So these robotic contributions have enabled us to be part of these international programs and be able to do science and to have astronauts participate in space exploration. So for me, one of these highlights is just the success of the systems. They've been working so well doing inspection, maintenance, and assembly of the space station. Without Canadarm 2, there would not be a space station.
As you were talking about it, I was just remembering back when I was at Discovery Channel, I wrote about space on like a daily basis, but, and I'm not going to remember exactly what mission it was, but there was one space shuttle mission, and there was a question of whether they damaged their heat shield on the ascent into orbit. So they were able to use the Canadarm to examine the space shuttle to see if there was any damage and then figure out how to repair it. Do you remember that, Daniel?
Yes, robotics are extremely enabling. They're really versatile systems that give you capabilities you never thought you'd be required. So for that inspection, new tools were developed. The orbital boom sensor system that was deployed by the shuttle arm to be able to inspect itself. And it's just one example of the mission criticality, just expanding and expanding. Being able to do free flyer captures was never planned, and Canadarm2 evolved to be able to do that, and be able to be controlled from the ground was envisioned, but wasn't an original capability, and it evolved to be able to do that.
Yeah, it got some upgrades along the way. So what was the original package wasn't the final package. It's gained new capabilities as it went, and in fact, it's still gaining new capabilities today, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, let's talk about the Canadarm3 and the plans around it, because, you know, Canada is continuing to work with NASA, our good partner in space here. And I'm just sort of wondering about the Lunar Gateway and the roadmap for what's going to happen, when things are going to happen, if they're going to happen. What insight can you give me there when I try and figure out what's a clear plan for this and what funding has been secured for the project? It's a little murky to me. Can you clear it up?
I'll do my best. Maybe first I'll just explain what the Lunar Gateway is in a few words. It's a lunar orbiting space station that's going to be an outfitting outpost for the exploration of the moon. And it's part of NASA's infrastructure for lunar exploration, along with the Orion capsule, the Space Launch System, that new world's biggest rocket that's coming up, and also the Human Lander System. So those different pieces of the puzzle together will enable exploration, and Canada is very happy to continue in this international partnership led by NASA. So there's Canada, ESA, and JAXA that all have funding authorizations and budgets to work together towards the lunar exploration. And for Canada in 2019, we committed to provide that Canadarm3 system and also to enable some tech dev for lunar surface exploration. With respect to the long-term outlook, we have to remember that all of these budgets are approved yearly for, it's just the way governments work. So the US administration right now continues to be supportive of this, and the budget request is it'll get approved in the fall by Congress. So all indications are that all these elements of the lunar exploration program, including Gateway, are going to be going ahead. It's, the US has a $23 billion budget, and all those elements of that lunar exploration are about a quarter of that, and the Gateway itself is less than a billion. Canada's committed to provide over 24 years a $2 billion investment, not only for the delivery of the Canadarm3 system, but also all of the services that go with it, including operations.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that we think there's a strong commitment to it there, because there are other ways you could go about space exploration and staging missions for the moon. And beyond that, eventually we want to send people to Mars is part of this plan, even further out. So can you just talk about the advantages and the disadvantages of a Lunar Gateway approach compared to, say, setting up a base right on the moon's surface, or even just using the ISS as an operating hub?
It's a good question. It's possible to do a staged lunar landing that doesn't involve the Gateway. The human lander system is something that can dock with a crewed capsule in lunar orbit directly and then land on the moon without stopping at the Gateway. The Gateway gives you a capability to do much more. The Orion capsule can loiter for 21 days, I think it is, but with the Gateway, you'll have this permanent safe haven and outpost around the moon that can not only allow for that single mission to last longer. Instead of 30 days, it could be 60 or 90 days. You could actually do multiple lunar landings using the refueling capabilities of the Gateway. It's there to enable a more sustainable lunar exploration. But I think, if you ask for my personal opinion, I think the main thing the Gateway does is that it gives NASA and its partners the capability to maintain its expertise in long-duration human spaceflight systems. So we're going to need, when we go to Mars, this capability to have crewed systems that last for months and months and years. And without a successor to the International Space Station, that expertise is going to be lost. So I think it's very critical from that perspective.
I see. Okay. Well, you mentioned the upgrade that the Canadarm2 got to be able to be controlled from the surface. And I know that as of today, the Canadarm2 can be controlled on the space station itself or from the surface. In fact, it's controlled from Montreal, is my understanding. So we're going to talk here about Canadarm3 and how it will be controlled in a moment, and that's much different. But first, I just want to establish how the Canadarm2 is controlled today.
Right. So Canadarm2 started off as like the shuttle arm, as a teleoperated system. You can imagine the on-orbit crew holding joysticks that are used to direct the endpoint. And that crew is highly trained to use different select and use camera views and sometimes window views, but not that often, and execute safely inspection, maintenance tasks, or even sometimes moving around at one of their fellow crew members on the end of the arm. So this teleoperation mode is, of course, really time-consuming for the crew who ideally are up there to do science. And the system was architected but wasn't originally delivered with the capability to do ground control. And it took quite a bit of effort from a software perspective and also from a safety perspective to evolve the space station mindset to allow for the ground to be able to do that monitoring and to be able to do that command execution. The ground does not use joysticks. They send really basic commands to position cameras and run joint auto sequences to position the arm. And it's sort of a step-by-step approach with safety checks, human validated safety checks every step of the way.
Okay. And how long does it take? What's the delay between the surface and the Canadarm2 being controlled?
It's noticeable, but it's very, very small. So of the order of seconds, it's mainly because of the communications relays, not so much the time of flight. So, And it's similar for the moon. We're only talking of the order of seconds of delay, and it could potentially be commanded in a similar way. But we're looking to really improve the autonomy intelligence of the system on a path to Mars type of paradigm, like you mentioned.
Right. And this is the big change that this space program is working on now. I'd say pretty major upgrade and scope of how the robotic arm will operate, that it's designed to operate entirely autonomously using AI to complete its tasks instead of that human controller. So tell me more about why that's necessary.
Well, it's necessary just to become more efficient. We have large teams of people on the ground, and it's not a good commercial paradigm. And we're aware of the capabilities today. In a way, space robotics is going to be catching up to capabilities that exist already on the ground. And that's because of our long development cycles between different contributions. So at the beginning, we'll be doing catching up. And then at the end, I hope we'll be pushing the frontier and then having spin-offs again, like the tremendous success stories of spin-offs in medical robotics and nuclear inspection capability, operating in harsh environments where other systems can't go, is one of the great successes of the Canadarm family.
Right. And you mentioned, though, that idea that we're designing this with the mind of what will it take to actually get astronauts to Mars. So how does having autonomy in the Canadarm point us in that direction?
When you don't have this direct real-time capability to prevent a catastrophic hazard, you need to have a system in which you have really high confidence, even after one fault, even after two faults, the system is not going to cause any damage to the station or the crew inside or the crew outside. And with the system, if on the path to Mars and at Mars, we know this from the work with our partners are doing with rovers today on the moon, you need to have intelligence, local in situ intelligence to make sure that no damage is caused, right? And when you start to involve humans, that goes to a whole other level.
I see. Yeah, and I was reading up on this. So I understand the plans for the Lunar Gateway would actually only have it manned for 1 month of the year at first. So it's going to have to be able to act autonomously and maintain itself to some degree for most of the year. So that you can imagine why this autonomy will be necessary there. And my last question for you here, Daniel, is about the Mobile Service System Application Computer. That's called MAC for short, M-A-C. So MAC is the computer that will be in control of the arm. And I know that MAC is already being tested on the Canadarm2. There's been some missions near the end of 2020 where some autonomous operations were used on the Canadarm2, and AI was used to control it. So can you tell me about the upgrades made to the Canadarm2 to enable this? And how did the test go?
Yeah, those tests went extremely well. The system's been commissioned, and I'm excited to see what it's going to be able to do next. So I described before how operators were using really basic and safe series of commands to be able to move the arm. With the MAC system now, we can use high-level task, human-readable script commands to do things on the space station. And it allows us also to close the loop. So before, there was always a human in the loop, but now we'll be able to take visual camera data or have a special payload on the end of the arm that's doing some kind of inspection or scanning using LIDAR or visiting vehicle monitoring, and actually have the data from that system fed back and to send direct commands without any human intervention. Also great for if there's loss of signal. So the MAC was able to get executed because we had access to some sophisticated at the time processing capability for the artificial vision unit that was used to recognize these large targets and determine the pose of the different modules as we move them around on the space station. And taking that Pentium 1 with digital signal processing chips and turn it into actually a robotics application computer, where we can load any kind of software to interpret these scripts is pretty exciting. So the space station is used to do science and tech dev, and now we're using it to do tech dev for our own purposes to plot out the path for Canadarm3. And one of the greatest successes is actually achieving going through all the very, very rigorous safety reviews to show this autonomy is safe and that it does not jeopardize the station in any way. And the capabilities are just going to continue to grow.
Okay. And what's the next step?
So with respect to Canadarm3, we're looking at putting a layer of AI on top of this autonomy scripting. So not only just deterministic pose measurements, but now actually being able to detect a cable that shouldn't be in it in that task area, or any potential collision, which is what the operators, the mission controllers, spend a lot of their time doing, is making sure that everything is as expected and it's safe to proceed. So this cognitive vision, this ability to detect obstacles and avoid collisions, is something that we really need for Canadarm3. And I think we'll be doing a lot of work on the ground first. So Canada's making some data available from the MSS cameras for an AI challenge. And also our prime contractor, McDonnell Detweiler, is doing a lot of R&D to enable this. And they've set up a laboratory on the ground to make data available, representative data available for that application and other AI applications.
That's great. Daniel, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for telling me all about Canadarm3 and the role it will play on the Lunar Gateway.
It's my pleasure, Brian.
Our charge is to go quickly and stay, to press our collective efforts forward with a fervor that will see us return to the moon in a manner that is wholly different than 50 years ago.
As you just heard from Daniel Ray, the Canadarm3 will boldly go where no robotic arm has gone before. It will be a core piece of the Lunar Gateway. Its capabilities must include the ability to repair the space station and help approaching spacecraft dock. Unlike the previous Canadarms that were controlled by a person using a joystick, the Canadarm3 will be totally autonomous. That means it will have to be able to avoid colliding with other objects while it does its work. Having robots bump into things is usually bad, but that is even more true when you're in orbit around the moon. So, how will Canada create the AI that is fit to do the job? To tell me about that, I am now joined by Chris Langley. He is the AI and autonomy architect for Canadarm3, and he works for the robots manufacturer, MDA. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Brian.
To begin with, can you tell us more about the Canadarm3 and why it needs to move autonomously? I understand that the station won't always be crewed, and that being in orbit around the moon will mean the occasional loss of signal. But I also understand that the autonomy will help with a mindset of meeting the requirements of an eventual manned mission to Mars.
Thanks, Brian. That's an important point. In the early stages of the Gateway Station, and when crew are on board, there will be some occasional dropouts. But the orbit of the Gateway was actually chosen so that you have a generally good line of sight back to Earth. During those times, we'll be able to control the robots the same way we would control them on the International Space Station. But later on in the mission, an artificial imposition will be placed on the communications to make it harder and harder, eventually getting down to about an 8-hour communication window per week. And the reason for that is specifically to push for technologies that will allow both the spacecraft itself and also crew to operate independently from Earth. The reason why this is important is because if we look forward to an eventual Mars mission, approximately every 2 years, Mars passes passes behind the sun for a period of about 2 weeks. And so all communication with Earth is lost. So if we're going to send crew or more advanced robots to Mars, we need to be able to have them work those 2 weeks without contacting us. And so essentially, we're trying to learn how to command the arms in a way that's similar to how we would command the Mars rover, where we give it a set of instructions and allow it to do its job without us watching over its shoulder.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting to me that not only is this a hard thing to do to get a robotic arm operating in orbit around the moon, but the mission will actually put more constraints on and sort of make it even harder just to prepare for what you expect to be able to do in the future. So that's interesting. And, you know, what does the Canadarm3 look like? Right? Because you and I are in Canada here. So we, of course, have a very good idea in, as Canadians of what the Canadarm looks like because it's on our $5 bill. So every Canadian has a really good image of this in their mind. But for people that might not be as familiar with it, can you just sort of describe what the Canadarm looks like and what will this new Canadarm3 look like compared to the old ones?
Sure. The original Canadarm that was used for the U.S. shuttle program was a 15-meter-long arm, kind of like a long, slender crane in space. It had a fixed base, so essentially the shoulder of the arm was rigidly attached to the shuttle. It had only six joints, whereas all of the arms since then have moved to seven joints. Like you mentioned, on the back of the $5 bill, you can see both the Canadarm2 and the Dexter robot. So Canadarm2 is slightly longer. It's about 17 meters long. It has end effectors, or essentially the hands, on both ends. And that gives it the new ability to be able to inchworm or walk its way from grapple fixture to grapple fixture around the station. The Dexter robot is more like a human body. It's got two arms. Each of them are 3.5 meters long. It has a rotating waist, and it has essentially like a tool belt on the bottom. So now looking forward to Canadarm3, which is actually going to be not just one arm, but a whole robotic system. We're going to have a larger arm, which is actually smaller than the previous arms, but by lunar in the lunar context, it's a large arm. It'll be right. it'll be about 9 meters long. And then we're essentially splitting up the capabilities of Dexter. So it's now going to be a single 2 meter arm to do all of the fine dexterous work, and a separate carrier that's going to have all the tools and the spare parts that it needs. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to those, there'll be a number of specialized tools that it will use for things like inspection or grabbing visiting vehicles that have come to resupply the station, being able to essentially catch them in space and then berth them to the station.
Right, I see. So while on paper it's the shortest of the robotic arms, in proportion to the lunar gateway, it's larger than the Canadarm2 is to the International Space Station.
That's right. Gateway is smaller than ISS. So
1/6 the size, I think.
Yeah, so you don't need as much reach to be able to get to far-reaching areas.
Makes sense. All right, so I've got a good picture of it now, and I'm actually imagining it sort of going head over heels as it inchworms its way around the space station, as you describe. But let's talk about how we'll be able to see it when it's in space, right? Because I know it will be controlled autonomously, but of course mission control will want to be able to see what's happening. And there will be six 4K color cameras involved in that. And the arm is also equipped with the 3D vision sensor. So just paint a picture of that for me. Tell me what we'll see about the Canadarm3 as it's working.
Okay. Well, I think probably the first thing you'll notice, for anyone who has seen footage that was captured by Canadarm2 when it was first launched, pictures are a little noisy and they're a little grainy because it's kind of using the like NTSC technology. What you'll see from Canadarm3 is much better still imagery. There'll be higher quality, full color, like you mentioned, 4K. So we're hoping to get some really, really nice photographs coming from this robot. In terms of watching videos live, we do need to be a little bit more careful with that because the communications pipe from Gateway back to Earth will have actually a smaller bandwidth even than what we have to the International Space Station. So we'll need to be able to manage that bandwidth. but we'll be able to configure the data compression and be able to select which video streams we want. So we'll be able to get the most use out of that bandwidth that we can. And of course, there's nothing stopping us from recording high quality video on board the station and then downlinking it back to Earth at a slower rate later. So hopefully we'll get some very nice movies coming out of this. I think one of the big advantages that Canadarm3 has versus the other module cameras that will be on Gateway is because we'll be able to move while we're recording. So essentially like a big videographer's crane. I'm not sure if there are plans to use it in a more cinematographic way, but I think that would be really cool. And either way, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Canadarm3's first shot of the Earth from lunar orbit.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you imagine that will look like?
I think it's going to be surprisingly small. I think when we see it in relation to everything else, it's going to give us a really good feel of just how far away the moon is. I was trying to think to myself yesterday, given the orbit that we'll be in, will we ever be able to get a shot of the Gateway, the moon, and the Earth all in one shot? And unfortunately, I don't think so.
Oh, really?
Just because the, like I mentioned, the orbit is chosen to give good line of sight to Earth. So we're essentially at right angles to the line between the Earth and the moon.
I see.
So we don't ever get all three of them lined up.
Okay. Too bad.
We'll see what happens. But
Well, I'm sure there will be lots of great images coming out of it regardless. And, you know, Chris, you were in a webinar recently back in May. You hosted it. And I was watching this. You hosted it because you were sharing about how you will be creating the AI you need to avoid collisions in space. So I was surprised when I watched this because I learned you're releasing an open source data set, and that's called Trail to Kaggle. And Kaggle, of course, is like a crowdsourced or open source sort of place to share data sets for AI training and other things. And from what I gather, you set up a proxy for the Canadarm3 in front of a green screen. You shot a lot of video of it moving around, and sometimes it was bumping into things. So now you're calling on the AI research community to help you create an algorithm to avoid collisions. So tell me about how you sort of arrived at that approach, and why is this the best plan to train AI like this?
Sure. It might make more sense if I provide a little bit more context around how operations are done. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the way things are done on the International Space Station now, you have a team of robotics officers on the ground, and they have a 3D model of the station, and they plan ahead of time all of the maneuvers that the arms are going to do. So they have very good confidence that they have lots of margin between the arm and the payload and the station structure. But when they actually go to execute that on orbit, they still watch the video because that gives them a double check and increases confidence. Just in case something went wrong, they have eyes on it and can take a corrective action. So that obviously relies on you having an active communication link to the station so that you can get that video data down. Now, if we go to Canadarm3, operating autonomously without a comm link to Earth, the robot itself will also have a 3D model of the station, and it will itself be able to autonomously plan its own trajectories and keep enough margin between itself and the structure, just like the humans do now. But like I mentioned, since we won't have connection back to Earth, we won't have human eyes on the video. So if we are if we're looking forward to more like Mars-like or deep space type of situations, it would be really helpful if we had some kind of AI agent on board that was watching those videos and doing the same kind of function that the humans are doing, a sort of double check to make sure things are proceeding as we've planned.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we have that operational context in mind, talking more about the data set and why we chose to release it on Kaggle. As I'm sure you know, Canada is recognized around the world for its AI research and its AI ecosystem. We have three federally funded agencies that are devoted to building this capacity in Canada. There's the Vector Institute in Toronto, there's MILA in Montreal, and the Alberta Machine Intelligence Institute in Edmonton. And we actually worked with the last one, AIMEE, in order to create this data set. And the reason for that was we wanted the data set to be easily ingestible by AI researchers so that they could take it and start rolling with it as quickly as possible. The AI field is, as you know, growing very, very quickly. It's harder for an industrial company that doesn't necessarily deal specifically in data to keep up with that. So having that access to the research community, they will always be at the cutting edge. So from our perspective, making this data freely available is a win-win, because the community gets novel data sets that they can use to help advance the state of the art, and MDA gets a way to make connections with other Canadian researchers, and hopefully we can build partnerships and work toward creating future solutions.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll be interested to see, you know, who develops the algorithm and does it make its way to the Lunar Outpost. I love this idea that anybody, you know, that has the right skills could pick up that data center and training an algorithm on it that would be deployed in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we would love to talk to them. We want to hear all about solutions that we never thought of.
Right. Okay. And finally, on your webinar as well, you were talking about the hardware that the AI has to run on, because it will be installed on the Lunar Gateway, right? Not running from a server on Earth again. And we talk a lot about this concept of edge computing these days. And well, orbiting the moon is about as edge as it gets. So tell me about the constraints of the hardware that you'll have on the Lunar Gateway to run this AI model. And will that create some challenges to make it functional?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We're going to be very, very far from the cloud at this point. So there are a number of challenges that we need to bear in mind. A lot of them are driven by just the physics of being in space. So mass is the obvious one. There's a cost to fly hardware to lunar orbit. So you want to make sure you're choosing the right equipment to send in the first place. The second is power, because cooling fans don't help you in space. You need to find other ways to dissipate the heat that your avionics generate. So if you can imagine, you know, server farms here on Earth and every GPU has its own fan, this kind of thing, that's obviously not the way we need to go for Gateway. The third aspect is radiation, because there's higher levels of radiation in lunar orbit even than there are in low Earth orbit on the International Space Station. And you can run into problems where things like cosmic rays hitting your computers can cause computation errors, particularly if you're using off-the-shelf type of components like we'd have in our actual desktops. So the good news is that we have ways to move forward and kind of work around a lot of these issues. On the radiation side, there are radiation hardened avionics that are used in space. So those have the appropriate shielding and backups and more tolerant in their construction, more resistant to radiation effects. In terms of the volume of compute power that we need, we have the option to downlink data that has been stored by the robot as it's been doing its job. We can fuse that with simulation data that we can create here on the ground from our validated simulators, and use that volume of data to train machine learning models here on Earth, where we can take advantage of cloud computing. When we have a trained model, we can go through a model reduction step to try to compress the size of the model so that it fits on the flight avionics. And then we would deploy that final network just as inference only in flight. So that saves a lot on the computation power if you're not doing training.
Well, a lot of factors to think about there, not only just the limited processing power that you have with the computers, but the fact that the computers are exposed to outer space, of course, adds a whole new set of factors that people thinking about edge computing on Earth would never have to deal with. Okay. Well, thanks so much for telling us all about the Ganon ARB3 and how you'll be creating the AI that will be running this device, this robotic arm that we're all looking forward to, I think, seeing up in orbit around the moon. It's an exciting time to work in space in Canada, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. It's a real privilege to be part of something that hopefully all Canadians are going to be proud of in the future.
Time to return to Earth now and wrap up this episode of Tech Insights. Thanks for joining us for a special first year anniversary show. And if you were interested in how AI is being trained to operate the Canadarm3, then you might be interested in this blueprint from Infotech Research Group. Integrate artificial intelligence into your manufacturing operations will help your organization easily identify what AI you're best positioned to implement. Look for the link in the show notes of this episode. And if you haven't subscribed to Tech Insights yet, what are you waiting for? Subscribe on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, or really wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be able to explore our entire archive of shows since our launch last year. And we'll have new content ready for you every Monday morning. Thanks again. I'm your host, Brian Jackson. Thank you.